Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Thursday, November 10th, and we're back here with you. Our studio guest could not make it, so she's going to call in a few minutes, and we're going to talk about medical innovations and things like that, which is pretty interesting. We've been looking forward to this interview, but somehow it didn't happen until now. So
it's happening now, though.
Yeah, it is happening now, and actually the reason our guest can't make it is because she's in an area where they've had riots, and I guess the police have closed down the streets.
This is the world we live in.
Yeah, I know. So, a lot is going on and stuff. People are not happy with the results. I don't know how much more we can say. I think there's a lot of vocal people that are very vocal, confrontational, violent, and... I'd rather just stay out of that,
Mm-hmm.
I think this is ridiculous that people can't accept the results. And I've heard a lot of... Okay. So she has to go and get her car. Apparently, Tori locked the keys in her car. Now she's waiting for someone to get it. So I'm going to take a break for a few minutes here and... We'll wait for her to come back. We'll also wait for the guest. So sorry for this. We'll be... Oh, you're here?
I'm coming back.
Oh, okay, good. I was going to go into a break or something, but so are they on their way or what?
Yes. If you don't know, today was not a good day for Tori. Tori woke up nauseous because the first black president had to give the keys to the White House to a man who's endorsed by the KKK, but that's okay. No, but then I locked the keys in my car. And I'm blocking other people. So AAA is on their way.
Yeah.
Right on.
Do you lock your keys often in the car?
I might say I've done it before. I'm somewhat of an impulsive person. And Casey, my friend, was right there. So I went to go give him a big hug.
Uh-huh.
Anywho, the Prius isn't supposed to allow that to happen, but it did. So whatever. Anywho, it'll all be fixed with AAA.
Right. Oh, so the Prius is supposed to make it not happen,
yeah,
right?
But the... Okay, to be super honest, while my husband was away, I lost the first set of keys to the Prius.
Okay.
So right now I'm using the backup, and they have lost their batteries. So that's why it didn't beep when I shut the door.
Oh, okay. I know. Well, what can you do,
Yeah. What can you do? You just have to laugh. Yeah. Kind of.
There we go. Okay, well, I see we're getting a call coming in, so we're going to take this now. We're going to be joined by Adi Heppner. Adi, are you on the line with us?
Yes, hi.
Hi, thank you for calling in. Good. I was telling our listeners you couldn't come in this morning because of certain circumstances out there. So we appreciate you calling in.
Thank you. I'm happy to be able to be on.
Of course. So I take it you are in L.A. And tell us a little bit about what it is that you do.
So I am the Director of Development for Friends of Sheba Medical Center. And so I fundraise and what I like to call friend raise, which is raise awareness for Sheba Medical Center Tel HaShomer.
Mm-hmm.
Sheba is the largest medical center, the largest hospital in all of the Middle East. So it's our job to let Americans know of the importance of the hospital and what they are doing to save lives worldwide.
Sounds good. Now, there's a lot of innovation coming out of there. How long has the Sheba Medical Center have been in operation?
The hospital has been around for 65 years.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Wow. That's a long time. Were they from the beginning doing research and things like this, or was it just a straight hospital in the beginning?
Absolutely. From the very beginning, they were doing research. Mm-hmm. They started out as a medical hospital. They started as a small medical barracks at Tel HaShomer. Tel HaShomer is still a still an Army facility, and they've grown into themselves. They started doing research solely for military, and then grew into what they are now, which is for the military, for civilians, and for those who are not citizens of Israel as well.
Right. Now, so what kind of size staff do they have there? I mean, is it pretty big?
Yes. They have over 7,000 beds. So you wow. have to imagine that they must be
yeah,
a
that's
very
huge.
Large staffing.
Yes, right.
They have, let me see, they have 2,400 physicians, 2,300 nurses, and 3,200 researchers, technicians, lab workers, etc.
Wow, that's a lot. I mean, for a small country, that's pretty big numbers, right?
Absolutely. They take care of thousands of Israelis per year, and they have no quota in the amount of non-citizens they take in. So they take care of a lot of Gazans and a lot of visiting people from visiting nations.
Amazing. Now, so I see there's innovation going on, simulations. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, you know, we're laymen. We don't understand this stuff. So tell us a little bit about the research that's being done there. I see there's they created also MSR, which is the Israeli Center for Medical Simulation. So tell us a little bit about that. That's very fascinating.
So over the last decade and a half, one of the most significant threats to public health has emerged, and that is medical error. And we've always known of the existence of error, but it's the magnitude that's been uncovered. There was an article written by the British Medical Journal that said that the preventable harm to patients is estimated at more than 400,000 per year in the United States alone.
Wow.
And so MSR is Israel's answer to this issue. They are based in Israel, but they're the world's only national simulation center. Hmm. And so they built themselves out to be a world leader in the application of simulation-based medical education. And the idea is that every single medical practitioner, whether they are military or civilian in Israel, is trained by MSR, mm-hmm. and they are offering consulting and collaborative training throughout the world. And I can give you some examples in a moment of the places they're doing this in the United States and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is that well, the founder of this, Professor Amitai Ziv, he was an Air Force pilot in the IDF, in the Israel Defense Force, and he said you wouldn't fly a plane without going through every possible simulation that could be thought of. And why would you practice medicine on a human without doing the same?
That's true. You got to do it first by pretend, right?
You're right.
You don't want to jump into that without first knowing what you're doing. So this sounds cool. So what do they do? Do they have like actual like simulated bodies and stuff that they work on?
Yes, they have medical mannequins, mm-hmm. and those medical mannequins, they bleed, they cry, they give birth, they
wow.
have robotics that they use in coordination with this, and they also have actors. They're actually the second largest hiring application of actors in Israel, second to their entertainment industry.
Wow. That's very impressive, you know, and I know there's a lot of innovation coming out of there, a lot of technology and so forth. So would you say medicine is a big field there, medical research, let's say?
Absolutely, and Sheba Medical Center conducts 25% of all of the medical research that comes out of Israel.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot of stuff. So So I guess they now a lot of these simulations they're being used now, right? It's not something that is for the future.
No, they're being used now. They've They've been working with this for about a decade and a half. And so they're still looking to train more, and they're looking to expand their facilities. They're working right now in the U.S. and Canada, for example, with Columbia University, Case Western, Mayo Clinic, and more. But they feel that this is a need that should be extended through all of the major medical hospitals in the United States, Canada, and ideally throughout the world.
Right. Yeah, and you know, make advancement in medicine, find new cures and so forth. And, yeah, as far as educating new doctors and stuff, I think this is fascinating. So what do you do? You, like, raise funds and stuff for this research?
We raise funds for this research. We actually just had a gala in Los Angeles. We had over 700 people
wow.
at the gala, and we raised $2.2 million
Whoa.
That evening.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Is that a record for you guys?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I can't imagine you being like, no, we did three last year.
Yeah. Well, Adi obviously has done a job, you know,
wow.
done her homework.
Is it with an auction? Is it just charity? Is it a silent auction? Is it a bachelor, you know, bidding on a bachelor?
Bidding on a bachelor, though, that sounds like fun. It's pure charity. People, there is, in a sense, there's an auction, but there's no prizes. People are raising their paddles to announce their charitable giving and also have the opportunity to give anonymously on a card.
Wow,
that's cool. And I wanted also to make it a point, I saw here in the notes that Sheba Medical Center really works worldwide to help people out in Haiti and you know, in places like that where there's earthquakes and there's a lot of need for help. You know, I know that often they respond rather quickly and graciously to needs around the world for human suffering. So this is amazing. Now, where can people find out more information about this, Adi?
They can contact us. They can go to www.friendsofsheba.org. And they can learn about MSR and all of the wonderful research and practice that the hospital does. And if they'd like to get involved with Friends of Sheba, they're welcome to go to the website, learn more about how to get involved in your area, or to simply contact me. And I'm happy to give my office number or email.
Cool.
Sounds good. Now, I mean, do you want to give it out or should they just go to the website?
No, I'm happy to give it out to all the listeners out there.
Go ahead.
My name is Addie Heppner. I'm the Director of Development for Friends of Sheba, and you can reach me if you're interested at 310-935-0135 or adi@sheba, S-H-E-B-A, med.org.
Sounds good.
Do we go over what Sheba means?
No, we didn't.
Well, no, but Sheba is actually the name. Chaim Sheba was the founder of Sheba Medical Center. And so in the 60s, they renamed this after he died.
It
was originally called Tel HaShomer Hospital.
Got it.
And they named the hospital after Chaim Sheba.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
Sheba is such a powerful, sounds like I am Sheba, hear me roar, you
yeah.
know?
Queen of Sheba.
Yeah, Queen of Sheba, that's right. That's probably better.
That's probably where the name came from. Now, one more thing, Addie. How did you become involved with this and when?
So I started working with Sheba Medical Center 2 years ago, but my entire career has been at the intersection of Judaism and health, which is a fascinating intersection, but I have been working first with local hospitals to talk about the importance of spirituality, Judaism, and healthcare, and I worked with local chaplains and developing their programs. And then later I worked with the Israeli Red Cross, Magen David Adom, and I finally came to work at Sheba Medical Center, Friends of Sheba.
Wow.
So it's been a really fascinating career so far, And I really am blessed to do what I do.
Have you always been interested in the two of them, and they just sort of, you found a way to make them intersect?
You know, I think that's right. My husband's a nurse. I have so much family that's doctors, and you know, some people are equipped to be on the front lines.
Right.
This is what I'm equipped to do, and right. So this is how I do my part from the United States for Israel.
Wow, good
yeah.
for you.
Wow. Eddie Heppner, it's Sheba Medical Center. You guys can find out more information. I see there's also a link to the hospital's website too. Can you give us that one? I just lost it in my notes here. The website for the medical center itself.
Absolutely. So let me give you the best one.
Okay. I see there's sheba.co.il. So maybe that's the one. I don't know. It makes sense.
It's actually, I wanted to give you, ENG.
Okay.
.sheba.co.il for those English speakers out there.
Right. So we know what is written up there.
Yes.
Okay, Eddie. Thank you so much for all this information. This is great stuff. Nice to know all this innovation is happening, and hopefully, you know, we'll find cures for more diseases and that, you know. So thank you again for joining us, Eddie, and all the best to you.
All the best.
Thank you for listening, and have a great morning.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah, a lot of stuff happening.
Yeah, crazy. Well, good for them. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I know. And, I mean, you know, innovation is something that, you know, you have to stay ahead of the game, you know, especially in medicine. And when you are out, she was describing how they actually create like bodies, like artificial bodies that cry and bleed and things
like
that.
It's like robotic.
Right.
Yeah, I was reading about it. My friend's sister-in-law lost her hands and feet in a blood infection accident.
Oh, my God.
And so she's using a bionic hand that when she thinks to open up the hand, it opens. And when she thinks to, and she can walk on these sort of large, sort of robotic things. I mean, we've come so far. Right now, we're the most technically advanced we've ever been medically. Yeah. So you see people who are, you know, paraplegics walking again. It's incredible. Face transplants.
Right.
I mean, I can't get over like any transplant.
Yeah,
I think that's
right?
crazy. You put something in me and make it on them and they're fine. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So that's insane. So that's amazing. And I think the more in the Middle East is more technologically improved, the better.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And that's the thing also. This goes beyond borders and everything, beyond differences, and they help everybody, you know?
Yeah, no, the only place you think of is with Doctors Without Borders is a true, unbiased, they help whoever is in triage the worst. Right. There is no... You do not go by party. You don't go by people or race or, you know, ethnicity. It is who needs the most medical care first. Mm. So that's such a beautiful organization, Doctors Without Borders.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I guess there's nothing left to talk about in politics, right? So I'll give you the forum.
Okay.
Since I've been silenced by most of the people. So I've...
Wait, what do you mean?
I don't know. I just feel... Well, I don't want to take it anymore. I mean, I want to give you the forum. I'll sort of like try to help and so forth. But there's a lot of emotions going on. I just feel that people that are on the right are not being allowed to talk or to speak, not let alone celebrate. You know, I mean, you can imagine if it was the other side, there'd be celebrations on the streets and everything. So it's an unpopular election, but many people are not willing to accept it.
Yeah, I think what's funny is if it had gone the other way, you did hear people on the right say they were gonna fight it. So if Hillary won, you heard a lot of people on the right say there was going to be a revolution. So there was all this protection set up for riots if Hillary won. And the funny thing is it went the completely opposite way.
Yeah.
And people are trying to protest. So far, the protests have been a lot about not my president or just showing solidarity in that they feel nervous and scared because of, rightly so, some of the stuff he said about certain religions. I think it'll die down. I think President Clinton, I'm sorry, I think President Obama and Clinton are doing a nice job of giving speeches that say we have to respect the transfer of power. We have to respect them. Right now, Donald Trump's in the White House with Obama, and they are giving, you know, he said, I'll answer any single question he has. Mm-hmm. They've been there for over 2 hours. Michelle Obama right now is with Melania. The chief of staff for Obama is walking with Jared Kushner around the South Lawn. Mm-hmm. So Jared Kushner, if you don't know, is Trump's Jewish son-in-law. So you can see who's going to have a place in this administration. He's also leaked a lot today of major establishment people that he's going to put maybe in his cabinet, trying to, I think, ease some of the fear that it's just going to be this crazy, no experience administration. So you have people, you know, there are leaks that are trying to calm and assuage, I think, especially the Dow Jones. And I think they're trying to get the markets back to stabilization. You feel very much up in the air. And that's why the Dow Jones crashed so poorly. So it's a lot of not knowing if he's going to come in and be a president that he was like when he was running, or if he's going to be more moderate.
Right.
That's what I think people want to know. Is he going to be the person that's going to ban Muslims for real and have a deportation force, which is what he said? Or was that just to energize the base?
Yeah.
So that's
I don't think he's going to be that extreme. I really
don't either.
I think there's been a lot of fear-mongering and stuff.
Well, he said it. I mean, he's the one who said it.
Yeah. But he said a lot of things, and I don't think he's going to do this. I think with his speech, you could tell that he's starting to think presidential.
But you have to understand why people are scared. It's not like we're all scared because of fear-mongering. Like, the man himself said it. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm going to have a deportation. I'm going to take out 11 million people. So it's not like we're all, oh, my God, scared liberals. The guy said it. It's not like we're scared. What I hope now is that he doesn't run as a president on that. But that's what his platform was. So I'm worried. I'm worried, but I think it's going to be a lot more moderate than we think. I'm praying that it's going to be a lot more moderate and that we have people in the Senate that will and the House. I know Democrats don't control it, which is another kind of scary thing. But, you know, there's checks and balances in government. So hopefully that the branches of government will do their thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So what cities? I mean, like in a lot of cities.
Oh, God. It's like Austin, Chicago, Oakland, Los Angeles, New York. Yeah, all over. And a lot of people are like, hey, where were you during the vote? You know what I mean? 46.9% of people did not vote.
Really?
Like, yeah. So 25.6 went to Hillary. 25.9, I believe, went to Donald Trump. 46.9 did not vote. So it's like, where were you?
Yeah.
So a lot of it feels like protesting too little, too late. The outrage is like, well, you kind of missed the mark. You kind of come out and vote. But in the end, more people came out and voted for Trump than Hillary. She won the popular vote, but more people, they got the vote out better than we did. That was the end result. So. Mm.
But you know what's interesting is during the campaigns, people were saying how the Republican Party is fractured and it has problems and stuff. But now I'm hearing that the Democrats are really having like a moment of having to rethink everything.
I think they have to. And I think that both parties do. I think, again, everything was underestimated. The rural upset of people who feel like they've been cheated out of a system. White, black, rich, poor, college educated, Hispanic. We highly underestimated that group of people that, and they put Trump in the presidency. So now you got to go back to the drawing board for both parties and say, what did we miss?
Right. But my question is, why are these people feeling forgotten? What's their claim?
I think there's a lot of feeling of gridlock in Washington. They think Washington isn't speaking for them. I think they feel like they've been stereotyped. And I think they're right to a certain extent. I think, you know, you don't get a lot of people other than Joe Biden and the Democratic Party speaking for the really rural working class person. Mm-hmm. He knows specifically how to speak their language because he comes from that. You don't get Hillary with her sort of, you know, and Obama with their lofty thoughts and ideas really making a rural worker feel them that they understand them. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot more anger than we realize, and we underestimated it. And now it's you got to start from this, you know, square one.
Yeah,
you really do. And I think both parties feel that way. I don't think the Rubio party expected it either. So I think what this means is everyone has to rebuild because we just greatly misunderestimated the anger in people.
And that's it. I think the celebration was too soon. You know, I mean, people were so sure she was going to win.
Oh,
you know?
I mean, fireworks planned. I mean, really so. And we were, that's what I think hurts the most is we were so close because we really thought it was going to happen.
Right.
So it's not just like, oh, it happened.
So it's a disappointment.
And it was like,
shock.
It was like a 180. Because we're all wearing white and voting. And then it was like, what? So even that was more of like, huge shock. The polls were all wrong, like nothing
wrong,
we expected.
Right?
Yeah. So I think it's hurtful, it's painful, it's hard. People are trying to, you know, the ACLU just declared war on Trump and said they're going to stand up for everything they can. People are worried, but in some respect, Trump in the past has been pro-choice. Mm. He was a Democrat like 30 years ago.
Right.
So it isn't my dream and hope is Trump is much more moderate in the White House and unifying, I hope, than he was on the trail.
I think he will.
He didn't give us an indication he would be, but I'm praying he is.
Yeah.
I'm praying Ivanka Trump can somehow work in equal pay. And I mean, I'm really hoping that people of strong sense with a lot of leadership and hopefully some females are in his cabinet. I do. I really hope that.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Look, it's a big country. If he doesn't do his job, he's going to get impeached or whatever. You know?
Aaron Sorkin wrote a note to his daughter that kind of went viral. And he was like, I can't believe that within 1 year he won't do something of impeachable criminal offense. So, I mean, you know, you have a very volatile sort of man-child bully and you don't know where it's going to go.
That's true, but people are making assumptions also, and I think that's...
But not assumptions. I mean, he said he would get rid of ban a religion.
Yeah, but internment camps, I mean, come on.
But he said it. It's not like we're making it up and being like, maybe, and he said deportation force. That's a quote from him. So it's like a lot of Republicans want to tell me you're fear-mongering, and I'm like, look, just go to the dude.
Yeah.
I mean, you yourself don't think he's like a very particularly tactful man.
No, absolutely.
And he said some things that are truly scary to a lot of people.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I was conflicted and everything.
Right.
But, you know, I supported my party.
And I get that. I'm just saying you as a person can step back from your party and still say you get why people are scared of him.
No, of course.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I can sit here and criticize him all day. I have no problem with that at all, you know.
So let's just pray he's smarter than we think. And that was all for show to energize a base that really he tapped into.
Yeah.
Let's just hope.
Probably, yeah. He probably just wanted to really galvanize people.
That's my goal is like he was so smart on advertising that this was all one big advertisement. Mm. But once he takes power, he's going to be an adult, I hope.
Yeah.
I mean, Melania's the first lady. I don't know. That's crazy, but...
Yeah. So you tell me, you think that half of the people in the country feel that they were left behind? I mean, is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that's the reason he won.
Half the people have spoken, half of the voters, right?
Well, not half the people, half the voters.
Half the voters.
It was like a quarter of the people.
Right, exactly.
Which is why Democrats did so poorly was they didn't get the vote out. Mm. Do you know what I mean? If they had gotten more blacks...
But they've done a great job.
They did not. No, really? Obama had carried Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Florida. And I got to be honest, that all went red.
Right.
Every single one. So something went wrong in the ground game. The Clintons did not get their base done the way they needed to do in the swing states. They didn't get the vote out. They didn't get the amount of people out. They didn't get blacks didn't come out like they thought they would.
Right.
So it did. We just didn't do it.
It's still no guarantee that they would win those states, you know, because things could have happened where people do not support the Democrats over the past 4 years.
Absolutely. But places like Madison, Wisconsin, which are extremely liberal, that was a crazy amount of maybe it won't go blue. I mean, that's what's insane. Right. So you have to blame the parties already apologized and blame themselves. We did not mobilize what we needed to do. Mm. Really, they didn't. And, you know, Obama had the great vote. The African-American vote came out very strongly for him. They did not for this election.
Mm.
So we dropped the ball. You can't blame anyone else but us for our mistake that many people didn't come out and vote.
Right.
And now there's all these protests and you're like, well, we needed them there then. You know what I mean?
Right. But it's also an assumption that people are going to vote a certain way. You know, I mean, the thing is that from what I understand, 13% of black men voted for Trump.
No, so, 29% of Hispanics voted for Trump. It's crazy.
You know,
nobody expected that. Exactly.
Right.
So
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Maybe the things he's saying are not that terrible that people overreact.
You have to understand when 46% of the people don't vote, you can't say what they would have done or wouldn't done. I mean, that's an enormous amount of people that didn't vote.
Right. But you can say that about anything, really. I mean, you can say that anything we voted on doesn't count or maybe it's
No, I'm not saying it doesn't count. I'm saying the majority of people didn't vote. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Because you're not hearing from millions and millions of people. So it's a shame. It's a shame that America has this legacy of a lack of voter popularity. It just...
That's true.
They feel their vote doesn't count. And in some places, New Hampshire came down to 96 people at one point.
Really?
It did count. And we did not do the job. Also, you got to be honest. Hillary Clinton is not that likable. Mm. If this had been Joe Biden, do you feel me?
Right.
So I do love Clinton. I'm with her, hashtag whatever. But she is a hard candidate to have advertised for in terms of the distrustworthiness people feel about her. She is just not well liked anywhere.
But
so it's
neither is he, you know. I mean, neither is Trump. So
no, but if it would have been a strong candidate for the Democrats against Trump, you could have won easily.
Yeah,
do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm with her. I'm a feminist. I'm glad she ran. But it was, you know, a lot of Bernie Sanders people say if you would have let him go and not stopped him with the DNC, he could have maybe beaten Trump. I don't think that's true, but I'm saying Hillary Clinton is not the most likable person to try and win this. So we had a lot going on, and everybody underestimated it.
Right.
So, you know, the country spoke in elections. You win, you lose. Obama said he got whooped his first election. He was 40 when he got whooped, you know, and it's embarrassing and it happens, but you move on. I'm just, I think people are rightly scared. And I think what Trump needs to do now is to really make it clear that he's going to be a president for every American.
Right.
That will really assuage, I think, a lot of people and allay a lot of fears that people are feeling.
Right. And I think he'll do that because he knows it's like...
He's not retarded. Really, you know, he's not stupid. Excuse me, I should say. Yeah.
You know, once you're a president, you do want to try and unify because people are going to look to him to do that.
But he's not a unifying candidate.
Right.
He never was. So he was a very divisive candidate. So to go from one to the other is a complete 180. Will he then lose his fans, the fan base, right? If he's like all of a sudden he's like, no, I'm not going to stop same-sex marriage, is he going to lose all the Appalachian coal miners that are like, I want our country to come back?
Right.
So I don't know what he's going to do. I in my dreams, I think he's too smart and too much of a New Yorker to go so crazy. But that's what I thought he'd do in the primaries, and he didn't. So
yeah, right.
I just pray that we all don't go backwards in terms of, you know, rights for certain minorities. That's what I pray.
Right.
And already you see a lot of bullying. There's been swastika signs all over the place. It's like someone said to some kids on the bus, aren't you supposed to be in the back of the bus now? So it's run trickled down to our kids who are told this is a bully running. He's never going to win. And now he won. So you have to tell your kids, okay, well, the bully won. What are you going to do about it? And another thing that's weird is Back to the Future was so right on. The Cubs and Biff winning. It was based on Trump in the same year. That's insane. That is insane. But good job on that sci-fi movie.
So, I mean, so of all the people that predicted, I guess nobody really predicted this, huh?
No.
Yeah,
I got to be honest. I don't think Trump did.
Yeah.
You see pictures of him watching and... He looks a little, like, very nervous.
He didn't expect it, right?
I don't think he did. I don't think Ivanka did. I don't think Melania did. I can't tell you anyone I thought was like, he's going to make... Now, I hear people say it's not going to be a landslide. It's going to be close. And it was way more unclose than I thought. I mean, he really trumped her electorally. Now, there is a thing going on. There's two things happening now. California people are saying they will secede.
They want to secede.
That's one thing.
Now, why? Because they don't want to accept the president? Is that why?
Yeah, basically, what you saw on the map was a coastal Democratic country.
Right.
With a very the middle of it was very red.
Right.
So, in some respects, a lot of people are like, well, then just make two Americas, which will give you more of a voice of who the people are. Mm. There's another thing of the Electoral College. Since she's the fifth person to win the popular vote and not get the electoral vote, people are saying abolish the electoral vote. Now, the other last ditch effort is December 19th. All we did was vote for electoral votes. We didn't vote for president. So the electorates have to vote now. Right. So the only thing that Democrats are holding out hope for is December 19th. If an elector feels that they cannot vote for who their, you know, state said because of something called, I think it's called failure electoral, where they think they have to go against what their state said, there is a way for Hillary to get back in the White House because it's now up to the electorate. That is exceedingly rare. It has happened before where people have switched their votes with John Kerry, for instance. But that's what people are holding out hope for.
Right. You know what I was reading, though? The reason we have the electoral college and this way of counting is to prevent the large states from bullying the smaller states.
Yeah, I mean, and back then, when there was colonies and you had a huge amount of... I understand that, but it's hard to explain when someone wins the popular vote and doesn't get the presidency. It's hard.
Right.
And I understand they were trying to put protections in place.
Right, but the popular vote was what, like 200,000?
The popular vote, she won by 0.2%, but she still won. So it's confusing. It's confusing that someone can win the most votes and not win. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I know, but this has happened before, right?
Yeah, it's the fifth time. So people are like, maybe this is an outdated, archaic way of voting. And it kind of is. It's an 18th century mode of voting that we put in place that might need to be updated a bit.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
But that's the same view that says that the Constitution is a living document still, right? So that's the argument on your side.
Yeah, but I also don't think the Founding Fathers... I think the Founding Fathers put enough in place with amendments and movability that the Constitution, not to say I know you disagree with this, but there, it is supposed to be a flexible, moving, historical document that can't just be concrete. However, I do understand the conservative side saying everything is cemented in, but there has to, the reason they allowed amendments is because they knew things would change and happen.
Right.
So at some points, the Founding Fathers, Thomas Jefferson was not an idiot. He knew things would change and move. At some point, do you need to take the 18th century archaic law and move it? Perhaps, but that's up to the people. You know, that's up to the people
exactly,
to organize.
Up to the people.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people won't accept the Constitution as this is the written law, you know, and
exactly.
That's what we have to go by. So there's a lot of differences in opinion here, but
is it the spirit of the law or the letter of the law? And that's a real Federalist issue. It's a James Madison, Jefferson issue, Hamilton issue. Is it the spirit of what they said in the Constitution or is it the letter of what they said? And that's just a debate between people of ideologies,
right.
You know?
Yeah, I know. But to secede from a country because you lost the election, I mean, come on, you know.
That's what the South.
Yeah, I know. I don't know that it's going to happen, but you never know.
Oh, it's definitely, I don't think this is going to happen.
I don't know. I mean, from the reaction in California.
Oh, it's out. I mean, California, really what they showed is if you're a Californian, you are extremely progressive. They were the one state to go blue on almost every proposition. Right. They banned plastic bags. Marijuana is legalized. They have helped the homeless. They opened up new infrastructure. So if you're in California, your state is solidly a democratic progressive state. Right. And you're very self-sufficient as a
right.
Californian. So I get that you want to... You don't. Your president doesn't represent you at all.
Right.
So I get it, but I just don't know if it'll happen.
Right. You know, there's a lot of criticism about who the voters are and that, you know, middle America is red and all that. But what people are forgetting is California and New York are not the only states in the country, you know. They can't make policy for the rest of the people. It's like suddenly... nobody else matters?
No, I think
California.
They do. I think they do. What they're saying is that the red states can't make policy for them, so they'll just simply secede.
Right, which is throwing your toys out and going home, pretty much.
Yeah, I think... I don't know if... Of course, I like jokingly talk about... I don't think seceding will actually work. I don't think it'll actually happen. But I think it shows the level of anger that they'd rather be not a part of the United States than represented by this man than be a part. And also... Right. It's very hard when one part of the country is a highly, highly, like 180 degrees opposite, that it's hard to think of bipartisanship anymore. Mm-hmm. And some people are saying the gridlock will stop if you just simply allow us to be two different countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's, like I said, that's the easy way out, but I don't think that's...
Well, that's what the South did in the Civil War, exactly, when they seceded.
Yeah, and then
exactly.
We had a Civil War.
Right, exactly. I'm not suggesting it's a good idea or one I'm, like, happy to say I'm behind, but I understand the feeling of, like, nothing I believe in is being... discussed or even thought of is now is in all three branches of my government.
Right.
And what can you do? Well, you protest.
But what about the people that felt like that before the election?
What do you mean?
You know, they didn't offer to secede or anything. I mean, we've had Democratic leadership for 8 years.
Totally.
You didn't see that kind of behavior, even though people were very angry.
Well, you saw Texas.
A lot of
people in Texas wanted to secede throughout Obama's presidency.
Yeah, well, they wanted to. But, you know, I mean, but it wasn't a general thing. I mean, this is like overwhelming. And,
well, Californians are also very vocal, and they're very organized. So stuff happens quickly and more quickly in California than the rest of the country. So like same-sex marriage, legalization of marijuana, that stuff is going to happen in California first and then spread out. So anytime you have a state thinking, I'm going to go somewhere, it's going to start in California. Mm-hmm. People are in tears. I mean, I think people are ready to leave. So at this point, it's just the most contentious we've ever been, the most divisive it's ever been, the most vitriolic it's ever been. And it's dangerous. And I think kids are scared. People are scared on both sides.
Right.
So.
Hmm. Yeah. Well,
but you have to understand that if Hillary had won, there would have been protests by the right. Violently.
Well, that's one thing about the liberals. They seem to be sure of what's going to happen all the time.
Well,
it's like you don't know that. Yeah, he may have said whatever, but
not
until
him,
it happens.
But you guys had militia in Michigan and Texas and Arizona say, we will bring out our guns and fight if Hillary wins. Not me making that up.
Well, these are not my people.
That's right.
So,
exactly.
Yeah, I don't know
exactly.
What's going on, you know.
But we're saying is like, those type of people did speak up. So it's not when we're not making it up. Those people warned us. We will come out with guns as a militia. There will be a revolution. So that was what we heard on one side. I think what we're trying to do is maybe a peaceful protest of seceding. I don't know if it'll work, but it's tense out there, man. It's tense.
Yeah.
It is tense. Thank God weed is legal.
I know. Yeah, everybody go and get high a little
apparently
bit.
The dispensaries are out of control with they're just packed.
Really?
And you know, the effect doesn't come in, I think, till 2018 recreationally. But I think people are just they don't know what to do. I mean,
really, till 2018?
I believe the recreational regulations begin only in 2018. It has to take a while for everything to get in place.
I think what I read is that it's legal to smoke it now, but not to buy it or not to sell it.
Correct. I think I'm talking about the commerce of it.
Right.
Will come into play at the 2018, but. Yeah, people are looking at I have people ask for Xanax. A lot of people got drunk for 3 days. I mean, people are nauseous. They're nervous. And they're having some actual, like, psychosomatic symptoms. So it's nerve-wracking out there, man. It's not a kumbaya feeling.
Get mellow and get yourself
mellow,
some
man. Do some meditation or try to fight back and work with your local senator or congressman, you know.
Yeah.
Do what you can.
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
A lot of fear on both sides, I think.
Absolutely. You know? I think I completely agree.
Yeah. People are afraid to speak up. Let's see. So, yeah, a lot of countries are shocked as well. I guess just like everybody else. You know, nobody believed it was going to happen.
Someone wrote American Psycho. I think it was in London. Because, I mean, they from afar, think about us being in it. He looks like more of a character from afar. Mm. So imagine them being like, they elected this guy after they moved so far with Obama. Like, it's insane to them. And it's like Brexit to us. You know, right. We're like, how did they do this? Well, we did. You know, we did. We went this way with it. So
yeah.
I think abroad we're going to be sort of. You saw the Dow Jones literally crash. They had to stop trading. They had to stop the New York Stock Exchange because they put an emergency brake. After it goes below 500 points, they legally have to stop trading. So the world erupted and it showed you what happened. Hopefully he really unifies. Hopefully he has it in him. I'm praying this man can do it. He hasn't given me any reason to think he can, but I'm still praying.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
He hasn't given
he
me
can
anything
do, right?
to say other than his speech that was very weird saying we're all Americans now. That was the only hope that I saw that maybe he's not a total idiot. Mm. That maybe he is going to try and unify, but that's just, you know, my wish.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll see what happens, folks. Try to mellow out a little bit. Accept reality and move on, I guess. I don't know. And try to make a change if you're not happy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're not happy, don't just sit there and whine. Do something about it.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
Get the vote out next time.
All right, everybody. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Tori. Is your car all open and everything now? Your car's unlocked?
Yeah.
Okay.
AAA didn't even need to do it. Someone else just got in the car.
Really?
And I'm like, kind of worried about that, but whatever. Whatever. Thanks, whoever did it.
There you go. Well, you have your car back, and that's important. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.